Well, do you, I'm not so sure you're asking a question.
Well, what I was wondering, if you would be sure we separate them. I know that you stand strongly on Sensabaugh. We all know what that is. But, and sometimes I imagine you must wonder why we take so little of your advice on Sensabaugh. But there is more, I guess I would say, in the political arena that meets the eye here. There's a principle that goes way back. Walter is probably the one in your firm was most familiar with that principle. And some of us don't want the, when I made the remark a while ago that make Tom Fink governor, I was talking about the politics of it too.
Senator, I can understand your concern with the prices that you get for your oil, and you'd rather get higher prices than lower prices, and that's fine. But the question is, if the price is not set at a level that you think is appropriate, then what do you do about it? And I guess it's just bothersome to us that what you do about it is to throw a burden back on a producer here. That's what you're doing about it. That then goes against what we feel is appropriate kind of severance tax, because then you run into all the kind of economic problems with this gross tax, you see, and that's our concern. I mean, and we appreciate why you think in terms of floors, and you want to get an adequate value for your oil and so on. We understand why you do it. It's the consequences. Well, this tax also raises the tax on natural gas. If you recall our testimony before, we were always pointing out to you that this, if you did this, you would have an impact on Alaskan consumers, that it would flow through to Alaskan consumers. I noticed that there is another bill which is House Bill 329, Senate Bill 239, which is a residential fuel credit, and I presume that the intent of this is to mitigate to some extent the impact that raising the gas tax would have on Alaskan consumers. We're not really in a position to know how adequately it does this, because this has to do with what fuel bills really are in Anchorage and so on.
It's called the Relief to Anchorage Bill.
Relief to Anchorage Bill. Well, anyway, we really don't have the information to calculate how adequately that does that. But obviously, you are concerned with that aspect to it. And the balance of the increase, of course, would be assessed against exports. Now, I think that the other thing I should point out is that here you have in this not only an increase in the tax rate from 4% to 10%, but you also introduce a floor price here. That is a minimum 6.4 cents per MCF, which is an effective floor price of 64 cents per MCF. And I think we have the same reservations here about this as we do with on the oil side. That if you have oil flowing, producers getting less than 64 cents. Someone mentioned 42 cents the other day, but less than 64 cents. That you start to raise the effective rate of it. And I think we have the same problems with it here as we would anywhere else. And this also has the gas flared feature taxation, but it's only double that. And all my comments on that go for this too.
That is in the equalization bill?
No, it's in the severance tax itself. There's a provision. I'd like to talk a little bit about this whole question of the tax, the overall tax burden, and how you assess it, the kind of questions that Senator Rader has been talking about. But I would first like to just make a few comments on the property tax bill, unless there are other questions here on severance tax.
No, I was going to suggest that when you're finished on the bills and before you kind of wrap up, that we take a 5-minute break.
Okay. Should I just say a few things about the property tax?
Fine,
relatively
please.
Limited comments here. This is House Bill.
I do other things too.
House Bill 323, Senate Bill 237. Now, this extends the property tax to some other areas, as you know, this has been pointed out, to refineries and gas plants, and also to marine transportation and LNG liquefaction facilities and so forth. So it extends the kinds of things that you will tax with your property tax now, and at the same rate. Now, the only real comments we have here are that for each of these areas that you're thinking of imposing a property tax on, you think carefully about where that tax will actually be borne. Now, if you're talking about taxing properties for crude oil production that largely, obviously, is borne by producers. That is, they realize prices in the lower 48 that are set for them, and any tax you impose is a tax which they have to bear in terms of their own profitability. But that's not necessarily the case with each of these other areas that you're extending to, and I think you ought to think about what you are doing, because if you're looking at taxes, property taxes on refining in Alaska, we would expect that most of the refining capacity in Alaska for some time to come would be basically capacity oriented to supplying local markets, so that the tax that you impose on those refineries presumably would over the long run be borne by Alaskan consumers, so that you're assessing a tax which goes to the Treasury, but eventually that tax would have to be borne by consumers if the refineries are to be operate profitably. So you have to worry about that incidence of the tax. If you're looking at LNG facilities, you'll have to worry again about the consequences of this and what will happen, and who will actually bear this. Will it be a cost that will simply be passed along because the facility is under an FPC jurisdiction and will be passed along? That probably may be the case. It's not clear that if it's LNG for export to foreign countries, whether this would be the case. Who would bear it? It's not entirely clear. On the marine transportation, where you impose, yes.
Before you leave that, would it not also have some effect on our decision as to whether to locate in Alaska?
Yes, I think it could under certain circumstances. If it's a cost which basically the person thinking of putting in the facility has to bear himself because he hasn't got an automatic pass along, or he can't pass along to Alaskan consumers, or he can't through his regulatory process pass along, then it would be one of those tax entering into his decision as to whether to locate in Alaska. No one can say whether this is the thing that would swing it in the balance, but obviously it's part of the package of doing business, and if it's at a higher cost, it could have some effect, yes. And on marine transportation, again,
can
you have
stop again,
sure,
right there,
sure.
Because in marine transportation, I think George's and I's overlap, but the marine transportation is included in mine too. I wonder if we couldn't get Dick's response here, because I think it's a reasonable principle that we can go with, that if for the committee to actually knock off the added definitions here, that, and we may want to even go further than that, but at least as a principle, to knock off the definitions where they encounter a product. In other words, not an LNG plant, because that's the same product going through in an FPC control line. Not an oil tanker in the case of oil, because that's an ICC controlled interstate pipeline. And that just as a principle, that we could say that the things, so what you would do, the one thing you'd really knock out would be the word refinery, because a refinery or a petrochemical plant, either one of them changes it into products and is highly, a lot more labor intensive and a lot more investment intensive and desirable to the state. And we discourage them automatically by taxing them. So I wonder, we might want to change some of the others, but I just wonder, get Dick's idea at least that we go as far as the principle that what is added here to tax base that would be on things that make products out of it, that we should take that part out. You might want to go further.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying essentially is that you just look at the economic consequences in each of these areas that you're and think them through and who bears them and how. And
the reason I wanted it broke like that is I just got a feeling that we may meet a consensus on that, but then some of us will say, well, we'll take out tankers, and some say, well, we'll take out LNG plants or not, which is as the case may be, but I think there was one that we might have a consensus on, then we see how we go otherwise. And I think when we get working that out, it'll be important to know how, whether Dick felt different about the one that he did the other.
I mean, yeah, that's what I'm trying to do, trying to point out in each case what would seem to be the economic consequences.
Well, what I pose is that we could definitely knock out the ones where they become a product, and we might want to consider the others individually.
Okay. The last one's marine transportation, and there, well, there are questions of legality, I guess, but we can't address ourselves to those. But it seems to me you might have some concern about this one too, because you already face a problem where you are concerned with the fact that your oil may have to move to quite distant markets, for example, the U.S. Gulf and East Coast, and you're very much concerned, rightly concerned, about that long haul and those high transportation costs and what it may do to your wellhead value. And if you go this route of taxing marine transportation, you obviously add to the cost of transportation that whatever, I don't know how much would be thrown up by this tax, but you are, in principle anyway, adding to the cost of transporting your oil, which does have some, it certainly works in the direction of lowering the value of your oil. So I think that you ought to consider this as well. As I say, in each case, consider the consequences. But here you're putting an added cost onto transportation, and it may be small, but it certainly works in the direction of lowering your wellhead value. Basically, that concludes my remarks on the specifics of the bills.
Let us take the, we'll take a 5-minute break now and then come back.
Yeah, and it'll be relatively brief, including the remarks.
Again now and let Mr. Kilgore make his final.
Okay, I just would like to thank you, Senator Paul, conclude with a few remarks about this whole question of the total tax burden in Alaska, and what fair share is, and at what point do you destroy incentives, undermine profitability, and the like. And of course, Senator Rader has been pressing a number of people for answers to this. But as he himself, in asking the question, it admits there obviously is no easy answer to this question. If there were, somebody would have given it. I can't give you an easy answer. A number of things have been suggested, all of which make a certain amount of sense. What kind of activity is there in the state has been suggested. A number of people have suggested looking at the total tax burden in Alaska relative to other states. I have a few comments on that aspect too. It clearly is important what the total tax burden is on the oil and gas industry. There's just no doubt about that, and how it compares with other states. But it certainly is not just the absolute amount of dollars being paid or dollars per barrel of production being paid to the state. What really matters for the economics of the industry, for their economics of the industry, for their incentives to go in and so forth, really are these aggregate dollars or dollars per barrel things put in the context of the profitability of the operations in the various states. This is what really counts in the end, not just the amount that one pays. If one is paying a high tax, a lot of tax, but in a situation where profitability is very large, it's one thing. If they're paying perhaps even lower level of taxation in a situation where profitability is low, can be another thing. So that you really have to put it in the context of profitability. This doesn't make it any easier to answer, obviously, because profitability is elusive and difficult to measure. But certainly, one has to put it in this context, not just in the dollars themselves. And the second thought about it is that I think that, although some people have said this, the mix in which you get your taxes out of this total burden, your state and other states, is really not irrelevant. Someone suggested a dollar is a dollar is a dollar, I think, but this isn't really quite so, it seems to me, if you're looking at the burden of those dollars on people. If you have taxes that are really based or geared closely to income, that is income taxes and kind of a true income tax in the sense that it's directly trying to measure income, it's one thing if you measure it, if you collect it that way, as against certain just gross taxes or property taxes and the like. Because if you have taxes based on income, they have a different economic impact than gross taxes. If you have a severance tax, it's not it's not a matter of indifference how it comes. If you're collecting high severance taxes in Alaska because you have wells that are extremely productive, and that's the way your tax is structured, that's one thing. If you're just doing it flat out on everything, it's another. So that so that it's not just the total dollars, it's these dollars have different effects, and that my taxes in one circumstance, where they're thrown up out of a total tax package that's more closely geared to income and costs and so forth, may be less of a burden than in another case where you have somewhat lower taxes, but they're generated by things that have nothing to do with profitability, and you have a low profitability situation. So that I think it isn't simply the mix. It isn't strictly the total. It is the mix and the types of taxes that you have that also matters. And to the extent, the closer these are geared to income, the better you really are. The second thought I have on this whole question is the state, I think, thinking in terms of its the burden of its taxation, also has to remember that it has a role not only as a taxing authority, but you also in this state, and this is different from other states, most other states anyway, you have also a role as a landowner. You have lots of land, and you have leased that land, and you will be leasing more. And you have to realize that the higher and higher you put your own taxes, this will have some effect on the kinds of terms that you're going to be able to get for your land, no matter how you lease it. If you lease it on a bonus basis, the higher your taxes, the lower your bonuses are going to be, and the higher your if you go on a royalty bidding basis, the higher your taxes, you'll get lower royalty bids out of all that. Or if you have a net carried interest or a net profit interest kind of lease arrangement, which you may turn to, the percentage of profit people are willing to give you will also depend in part on the way the taxes.
Chairman. It was, this matter came up before in a different forum, and it was, the comment was made by the speaker was that not to be so terribly concerned because the competition in leasing would take care of that matter. Could you give us a comment?
What I'm saying is that I think the competition in the leasing is going to reflect your taxation thing. That is, if you have higher taxes, I would expect in general you will get out of the competitive process where people are bidding for leases on whatever variable they're bidding, whether it be royalty or bonus or whatever. The amount of tax that you're taking and that they perceive you'll take in the future will affect their bids, and they'll bid competitively, and it'll be reflected in how much money they're willing to offer you initially, or how much percentage of the thing they're willing to give you, and so forth, so that your tax will affect the terms you're able to get on your own land. These two are interrelated. Yes?
Representative Osterbeck.
I would like to ask a question. We listened to all this testimony, but we never came down yet with how much are we getting for our lot. And another question on the leasing. It don't seem to make any difference. The bids I saw what came out from the state or from outside the 3 mile limit seem to be about the same value. They're bidding into the millions for offshore leasing. What kind of a deal? Could you answer that on the offshore leasing and the taxes? What kind of taxes are they paying? Are we going to get a benefit out of the offshore leasing taxes?
Well, on offshore leases, I think I got your question. I mean, on the offshore leases, where they're in federal waters, you will not get a state severance tax from those barrels or MCFs of gas being produced out there. And basically the tax that oil in federal waters will be subjected to is basically just the federal income taxation, and you will not get severance or other kinds of tax revenues unless one is able to go through this franchise tax kind of thing, which I just don't know whether that's legally possible for you to do that. But unless you can think of something ingenious of that sort, basically it'll be just federal taxation on that. And the bids that would be received, if you had comparable prospects onshore Alaska, or let's say with offshore but in Alaska waters, similar prospects to something over the line in the federal waters, and you put these up for bonus bidding, presumably what you would get, since you have no severance tax on the offshore, you would presumably get higher bonus bids to the federal government than you in Alaska would get for your exactly comparable prospects. I don't know whether that answers your question or not.
Well, one other thing. Somebody brought up the other day that since we get 10%, or we pay 10% of the federal tax, I don't know, I never hear no more about it, would we be getting a share of the federal tax in the amount of 10%?
Well, yeah. To the extent you share in federal revenues and so on, yes, you do get some share that way. That's correct. But the other thing is, as you know, there is some move afoot in the Congress to provide some sort of sharing of royalties and other income from offshore production with states, with the coastal states. And I would think that the state of Alaska should push very hard for this kind of thing. And I would also think that in the past, this probably was not a kind of thing that the Congress would pass, because there were relatively few states which would benefit from that. Basically, Texas, Louisiana, and California would benefit from that kind of thing, that is sharing the revenues, some portion of the royalties and bonuses in the federal waters off their shores. But the situation seems to be quite different today, because we now are talking about exploration along basically the whole east coast of the United States. So there are an awful lot more states which potentially could benefit from this and presumably would support such a measure in Congress. So there seem to be a lot more to be said, a lot more support for that kind of thing than before. And perhaps you will get something like this. Also, I think there's a lot of merit in doing this from a national standpoint too, because as you know, on the East Coast, you have all kind of environmental opposition to drilling and everything, and bringing the oil ashore, and everybody is up in arms about the environmental problems. Well, I would think that if the states, those coastal states, including my own where I live in New Jersey, really thought they had the prospect of getting some share, direct share of the income from oil and gas in federal waters offshore New Jersey, I think they would view the environmental matters somewhat differently, or at least be willing to look much more realistically at them and support, have greater support for this activity. So I think that this is something Alaska should be looking for, and maybe it's something which another way you would be able to benefit. And if you were able to get some benefit in that way, some share of royalties and bonus income and so on from waters, federal waters offshore Alaska, I think the amounts of money I don't know what the share would be, but I think the amounts of money that you'd be getting would be very, very much larger than any kind of fooling with apportionment factors in that franchise bill to try to pick up some. You're talking about much larger potential amounts of money, I would think.
Talking about the environmental conservation and everything, you're going to get a lot of static from fishermen, where it's been coming up that the oil, well, take Kachemak Bay for a good sample. Now, Kachemak Bay, only, you know, it only produced about 6 million pounds of shrimp, but you come up towards the chain around Kodiak, what produce? That's just a drop in the bucket, and we're buying that back. So it's going to be a lot of static saying the Bering Sea is one of the richest crab, herring, shrimp out there. And out along the chain. So if there is no revenue for the state, then we're going to kill off our fishers, and there's going to be a lot of static coming sure. from that sure. on the offshore drilling, because you can see what happened in Kachemak Bay, right. which is just a small, you know, just a small little thing, and we're going to pay $10 million to buy that back to save that fishery. And if we're not going to, what I'm trying to get across, if we're not going to get no sharing off the offshore, there's going to be a big fight to try to stop it.
Absolutely, because you say, well, what do you need it for? You get nothing whatsoever out of it. I don't want anything I say to be construed as I'm against environmental concerns. They're obviously very, very real, but I think what you're saying is it's correct, and this goes for other parts of the country too. If what you're talking about is development of federal waters and off your shore with the potential problems, for potential environmental problems from which you will suffer, and you get absolutely no benefit, then what do you need it for? And you can, and in those circumstances, one would take a very extreme, I think, position on viewing the environmental damages. That is, one would say, I don't care if the chances are one in a million, I don't want it, because I don't get anything out of it anyway. If there's any chance whatsoever, let's just don't do it, but because I don't gain anything anyway. But if you have something to gain from it, I think perhaps one of the people may very well take a more realistic view of what the potential hazards are, what might happen, and the odds of them happening, and so forth. But if people are in a position where they have absolutely nothing to gain, and any possibility of something happening to their environment, they're naturally going to be against it.
One more, if I may. You can take, say, a barrel of oil is worth, what, $12, $11 to it?
Depending on where it is.
And a barrel of fish is worth about $200 or better. So what do we want?
Sure. If you're going to destroy a valuable industry,
right.
It's
not the attention.
Sure.
One of the propositions that this administration has put forth through the federal government, my recollection, is that it's just that. And this is why they were hoping to hold off some of the offshore production, was to submit a proposition to the federal government on revenue sharing. I think you're familiar with that. And I think you touched on it. In my recollection, and I ask this only for informational purposes, if you know, seems to me that we also suggested a two-tier affair. I know you hate everything with two tiers in it, but in that all of the states were able to get a portion of the offshore revenue, so that we would gain a broader base of support.
Yes, and I think that's a sensible approach to this.
Not that this, of course, mitigates the fears that are brought up by the fishermen, but I simply point out that.
Yeah, that's right. One can gain broader support where you have such approaches you're saying, where you have everybody benefits to some extent, but those who are directly affected or so on get somewhat larger share. That basically makes a
take care of Iowa's coastal zone concerns.
In effect, it almost parallels our hardware tax as far as the pipeline is concerned, whereby the state puts on a 20 mil tax minus whatever the boroughs take, those which run through, and then the rest of the state.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay, I was really, unless there are no more questions, at the point I was saying that you do have this interrelation when you think about how high you push your taxes. There is this interrelation between what your taxing policy will be, how much you raise in taxes, and what you're going to get in terms of economic benefits when you lease your lands. That's very, very clear. So to some extent, you're taking in one area through your higher taxes and you'll give up in another through lower, whatever it is, bonuses and so on. So to some extent they are offsetting, but of course at the same time you have to appreciate that while this is true on new leases, it for people under existing lease terms, obviously they can't change their contracts with you if you raise taxes. So you raise taxes, they are hurt. You also, through your tax policy, obviously affect the value of lands or the value that one can get out of lands of other landowners in the state. And of course the native corporations are obviously the ones who will be affected. To the extent that you raise taxes and they make new arrangements on their lands, they will be affected. They will get less in the way of
Madam Chairman,
whatever.
I think you finished with George's. I wanted to just for a moment on that same subject lead Dick back across the Cannonball Range and the mud flats and back to dry lands for a minute on his leasing policy. And wouldn't you were talking about bonus leasing when we got into this. And isn't it true that the price paid for a bonus lease, whether it's onshore, offshore, mud flats, or where, is based upon what they're willing to pay for the price to gamble on what may be down there in a huge gamble? And if we wanted to minimize what our tax would do on that, the minimum would be no tax. And other than that, to have a tax that would have a minimum effect would be a tax that was a percentage of a net profit. And if you had a percentage of net profit tax, it would have, that would be the kind of tax that would provide the minimum for losing money in your bonus. Because they would all figure, when they were bidding, that there'll be no tax on anything that we don't hit anything on, and it'll only be a maximum of this amount of exposure on the net when we do make, and if we don't make, we don't pay.
We don't pay.
That's
correct, but that's assuming, of course, that the income tax you have really is taxing what is real kind of income in Alaska. I mean, if you are on, as the gentleman from Exxon testified the other day, if you are on an apportionment formula, you may pay income tax anyway.
I didn't mean to lead you back into the net proceeds tax, which you have to decide,
but you're
I'm thinking of any fair income tax that would.
The income tax works differently, that's right, in the sense when he factors it in, and if it's a true income tax, he only pays if he wins, so that it does affect what he's willing to pay.
I just wanted to get it to where we actually, what kind of tax, we've heard so much, so many times, about how you discourage your front-end money in bonus bidding, and in some cases, it's absolute malarkey, you don't do it at all, and you hardly do any discouragement when you do it on a net profit basis. But if you get a portion of that in there in a gross manner, you've got a problem.
Well, my only point here was to leave you with the idea that we do have an interrelation between the taxes and what you will get on your lands when you lease them. But you also will affect, of course, the value that other people can get from their lands, and namely the native corporations. Well, in the end, this whole question of the relative tax burdens and the effects and when do you provide incentives, when do you discourage, obviously there are no easy answers, as I said at the outset. There are many things you would obviously have to look at, and many of these have been suggested. One would be obviously sort of economic studies of the industry, some of which have been done. Levels of activity would be another indicator of your tax, total tax package, lease bids and so on, comparisons with other states, and all these things are things that one would look to in trying to assess how far you've gone in your taxation policy. Well, I think one of the best really safeguards, since one would really know exactly where one is on this whole thing, even after you look at all these sort of measures, one of the best safeguards is probably try to design taxes in your state that relate reasonably well to profitability. I think you run less of a risk if you do this. If you're able reasonably or in some fashion to relate them to profitability, then you're not going to impose a very big tax burden if the industry isn't very profitable. And if it's very profitable, you tend to throw up higher taxes, and you run less of a risk, really, that you end up imposing unreasonable taxes on people. And this probably, in the end, is one of your best safeguards, to kind of keep those principles in mind, which means taxes related, either directly related to income or taxes sort of semi-related to income as the step schedule that you have, or the continuous schedule as is proposed, where you really impose high taxes only in circumstances that seem to indicate high profitability, that is, high wealth productivity, which tends to be associated with high. So I think that the more you keep to these kind of principles, the less of a problem you're likely to have in terms of really going too far in your tax burden on the industry. Thank you.
I don't know how much time you have.
Well, I have time.
I have questions on two matters which concern most of us. I know one of them particularly concerns Senator Huber also. And if I may, I'd like to ask him now. One is, and I think which is the easy one first, and one is, what is there, or do you have any comment on wiping out all the industrial incentive taxes in the state?
We really don't have a comment on that.
And the other one, then,
We're not really that familiar with that.
That's why I took that one first.
Yeah, that's easy to answer.
And the other one is something which was discussed back in 1973, when we had a bill before us to own part of the TAPS line. Now we have some bills in front of us which concern the possibility of again acquiring an equity interest in gas lines or other lines. And I wonder if you could comment on that, whether your position has changed or what it might be now.
George, would you be in one of the bills particularly? Is for an industrial
it is. It's
incentive
bill.
or for a state-sponsored corporation which would operate on its own under the so-called industrial incentive type of bonding, 100%. If you'd expand your question.
Yeah, Senator, that's what, yes, I was going to make it in two parts. One, of course, is to get a general statement on the state being an equity owner. And secondly, of course, we have Senate Bill 251, which is Senator Hubert's bill, actually.
Right. Well, I haven't seen the bill itself.
Establishes an authority, Dick, with all of the powers, 100% authority to build the gas line.
Yeah. Well, frankly, I would prefer, if you don't mind, kind of deferring an answer to this question and give it a little more thought. I mean, we have in the past, I guess, generally kind of questioned states being involved in things of this sort, but I don't want to give a general answer of that type. I'd rather, if you don't mind.
If you might, I don't want to force it either, but the reason that if you might give it some consideration, even when you go back home, is that the bill is not just one that is just an idea of whether we do it next year. This particular bill is either now or never type of thing, because it is designed, the whole purpose of it is to supply the North Slope gas to the lower 48 at an economically feasible price to make the project feasible, so it don't have to be subsidized either by users or government. And if it's with the FEA set up and everything is set up for the president's approval and everything, it's an either pass it, so it's a method, or else it will not be a factor. So it's a kind of a forced thing, but it's now or never. It's
timely. Yeah. So there are a lot of ramifications and a lot of things to think through on this particular kind of thing. I would prefer, rather than just giving it off the top of my head, if we did especially take a look at the bill itself, think it through carefully, and either come back to you with a written response or on the occasion of our next visit, we'll be prepared to do that. That's satisfactory.
What happened, Senator, was that the bill came in and we mailed them out that day, but the mails did not get them from New York. And that's
no, it came in after I left.
That's right.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's the problem. That's why Mr. Kilgore hasn't seen it. But we did.
Yeah, I know that you had mailed it out and that it was through today. But I wish that I don't care to tie up our time with it, but I'd like to have something very timely an opinion on, because if there's no way we can influence this gas line, if this doesn't do what the bill is designed to do, if it's going to miss its target, phooey, I don't want it, I'll withdraw the darn thing so quick and make your head spin. But it was just a chance that we might be able to provide the 3 or 4% or three or four points of interest difference between these kind of bonds and whatever El Paso or anybody else has to put out, that would make the difference in the overall debt equity of the project, so that it would be feasible as against being unfeasible. And if it won't do it, it certainly can influence the route. If it will do it, you know, if we just passed it, if it will do what it's aimed at and we just passed it, for that to be there would have a considerable effect on what Congress or the President might do,
Senator,
even if we never built.
We will give you a timely response on this.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kilgore. I think that about wraps it up. We certainly appreciate your patience and bearing with us all week.
Well, it's always a pleasure to be here.
I'm hoping that I'm correct on some of the things that Dick said, that he probably learned as much as the rest of us.
Yes, it was very interesting